So I'm Narve, and my research involves working with a lot of speculative fiction. So today I will be speculating a bit about the futures of the wetland and how a place is made. So when I first was approached by Jiska and Sinje to discuss, to reflect on what the futures of the wetland might look like, my initial reaction was, well, I am a complete stranger to this place. I am not Norwegian. I've been in Oslo for maybe 8 months now. I am not sure that I actually pronounced the name of this lake correctly. I did not know what the name meant, so I was a complete stranger. I don't have any memories in this place. I do not have a sense of the kind of cultural imaginary that surrounds this place. I don't know its history. I had no idea about the kind of environmental activism that went into making this place a nature reserve. So I was an alien. So I am going to be like narrating my perspective from the perspective of an alien. And I think it's important to kind of accept and recognize that positionality, that, you know, when we are thinking about the future of a place, that we are always thinking from a particular vantage point, from a particular positionality, and mine is the positionality of an alien from a completely different world. And, you know, when I came here, I realized, okay, I am an alien. I really cannot situate myself in any of the kind of symbolic meanings around this place. But what I related to was firstly the migratory birds, because I'm also kind of in this space as a transient being. I'm allowed to be here, like to make this place my home for a certain amount of time, and then I'm gonna leave. So the way I relate to this place is kind of transitory. I'm just passing through it. And then the second thing that I related to the most was the alien plant species, who are not really wanted here, right? Because they could be invasive or they could be disturbing the biodiversity that people are trying to keep here. But because I was feeling alien, I kind of felt connected to these alien plant species, because you can kind of pop up wherever you want, but it's difficult to take a root. And combined with the kind of general architecture of the place, where, you know, I am allowed to walk in a certain direction and I'm not allowed to enter a certain place, I came to think, okay, if we're going to think about the future of the wetland, then we're going to have to think about like what it means to conserve a place. So this is the future of the wetland, is about conservation. And conservation is always about exclusion and inclusion. Like, who gets to be included in this place? Which version of this place that we want to conserve? Because there are a lot of versions of this place that can be conserved. And in deciding which version we want to conserve, we are deciding who gets to be included and by who. I'm not only thinking about humans, so humans and non-humans. Who is allowed to kind of, you know, be in this version that will be carried on to futurity? And who gets to make these decisions of who is going to be allowed and who is going to be excluded? And who really are we like envisioning the future for? So these are some of the questions that came up for me in thinking about conservation and the future of conservation. And then the second thing, of course, was, okay, you know, I need to think about the future of this place. I need to know its history, because there's no way you can envision a future for a place if you don't know its history. And the way I approach history, the way I approach the past, is that past is not a static thing that happened and it's over. Past is continuing into the present, and past and the present is continuing into the future. So this is past and presence and futures are coexisting simultaneously. And so from within this understanding of multiple temporalities coexisting together, I did some research on the history of the place, and I learned about a lot about the activities of the friends and how they felt for like for more than 50 years to frame this place as a nature reserve that needs to be protected. And all this time there were attempts to, you know, develop the place and build a gym and build an elderly house, build kind of a recreational area, build a building complex. So there was like all these different attempts to imagine the future of this place very differently. So there were many different futures being imagined at the same time, and not all of those futures could coexist together. And this is an idea that we think with a lot in our program, the Co-Futures program, this idea of compossibility. What futures can coexist together? Because we can imagine a lot of futures. It's easy to imagine certain futures, but that doesn't necessarily mean that these futures are going to exist together. And when we're thinking about the future of the wetland, we are essentially thinking about the future of the city. Because when we look at the past, you know, the history of this place goes back to the Stone Age. It has also archaeological importance. You know, there are the Viking burial mounds. They found Stone Age axes. And it was an important place for agriculture. You know, it's kind of a... This place always transformed in relation to human activity. It's kind of related to the farm. And this history actually continues to exist in the name of the place. You know, it's the lake that is connected to the farm, and that was not available to me because I don't speak Norwegian. But throughout this research on the history of the place, you know, I came to realize that this is a place that has always been interacting with humans and transforming in this way, and it has not actually been this like kind of, you know, pristine wildlife, and that it is constantly changing and transforming into something else. And it was only after like this like intense environmental activism that it came to be this nature reserve. And so, third thing, if we are going to think about the future of this place, maybe it's a productive or creative practice to go back and look at the past of this place. Because people are not going anywhere, and the city is expanding, there are construction sites everywhere, there are people everywhere. And if we're like gonna really speculate into the future, I think that there's something to be learned about the past of this place as having importance for food production, having the kind of potential for agriculture. Here's a speculative scenario. There are many speculative scenarios that could go dystopian, but I mean, here is one. Just imagine there's another pandemic, or there is some sort of a war, or because of some sort of, you know, environmental disaster, there is a rupture in the food supply chain and people in the city are not able to get food. They're not buying food. So essentially, like, people ultimately people will have to like go seeking food elsewhere. And let's say there is this place which is diverse, that has this like immense diversity for edible plants as well, which we will be tasting. And so people come here like foraging for these foods, and then the meaning of this place completely changes. And now we have to think about certain things again, like who will be allowed into this place, like who will have access to this food, and who will get to decide who will be allowed into this place or not. And these are the kinds of futures that await us, the kinds of futures that will only be like manifesting through the relationship of this place with urban life and with the human beings. So having that in mind, then like, how can we envision kinds of being in this place and belonging and relating to this place that involves humans too, and involves humans not just as like visitors or guests or people who are like kind of separate, we're just protecting, we're just the stewards of this place, but humans as active participants in this environment who are co-building these futures together with other like beings who are non-human. So this kind of multi-species understanding of the future, I think, is where I would be envisioning the future of this place. But that also comes from, again, you know, my own positionality as an alien. There are many other futures that could be imagined for this place, and one could be that, yeah, it's just completely developed into, like, you know, a part of the urban life, and, you know, it is not conserved anymore. Or, you know, it could be turned into a farmland, and you know, people are, you know, gardening or planting or harvesting again. One thing that I would like to emphasize before I finish is that this place is bounded. So I think when we are thinking about conservation beyond this inclusion, exclusion, or borders between the conserved area and urban life, if we're thinking of like moving beyond these boundaries, then envisioning the future of this place also involves envisioning the future of things like urban farming, like permaculture, like community gardens. Like, how can we expand this idea of coexistence that exists in this place out into urban life, like not just limited here, but how can it expand out into urban life, and that would involve people's relationships changing, people's relationship to nature changing. So it's like the future cannot just be like restrained, contained here. It will have to expand, and it will have to really like push people to think more about how they are relating to nature and how they can change their relationship to nature and not perceive themselves as something separate from it, but something as a being that transforms and co-creates the futures together with non-human beings. I don't know how many minutes that was, but I think that's about it.
Thank you.
Any questions, comments? I'm not an ecologist, so I can't really make... I'm not interested in making predictions. Of course, there can be predictions made based on scientific data from the past and from the present, and extrapolating into the future, this is what will happen. But speculation, like the kind of speculative fabulation, the act of that is kind of envisioning these different alternative realities and creating them. It's not exactly the same thing as predicting or trying to kind of contain or like guess what's going to happen in the future, but kind of envision multiple futures, like diverse futures that can coexist together.
Yeah. I have a speculative question. Yes. I just wondered as I was sitting here and listening to you, do you think that the birds could help us with producing the food in this new pandemic? Could they, can we collaborate with the...
Exactly.
Do you think so? Or could, I don't know, is
yeah,
it possible?
We could be collaborating with all sorts of animals here, or we would have to share our food with them. Like, there could be, like, I don't know, fights between non-human animals and humans. There could also be ways of collaborating. I don't know, maybe, like, we train some of the animals to produce food in a certain way, or they train us, so... There may have to be different ways of relating. Yeah.
Let's hope it's not the bird.
Yeah. Any other ideas?
I think it's something so we talked a bit about, like this envision of the future close, like through a close relationship and observation of a place and understanding dynamics and cycles. And then, for example, when I once talked with Amund, who were telling about the Østensjøvannets Venner, when they first started up, you had a 5-year plan, or now I'm just saying from my memory, and then it turned into a 10 years, then 50 years, and now you work in a 100-year perspective. And then this kind of expansion of envisioning future or making plans for what you are doing and every step that you are in changes, that it has this like 100-year perspective, is through a very kind of close relationship and observation of the place itself. So yeah. Would you like to say something?
No, you're quite right about the perspective, because we tend to see things in a static way. People that come to the Lake Østensjø, they see it as it is, and they come next year and it looks the same, and they come back in 5-10 years and it looks almost the same. But when you look at this area and see the changes through decades and maybe a century, we have old photos and see the development that has been for this time, it's enormous. and you have to consider that time even when you look ahead and have a vision of what you really want with this area, because if you don't have a clear vision about what you want for this, you lose it all so very easily, because there are always someone, strong forces that would like to use it for something completely different, and we will be not as rich as we are now. Oslo is perhaps the county or community in Norway with the biggest biodiversity from nature's hand. And that has also drawn people to this area. And we are, in the way we are acting now, we are destroying the things that we really should preserve for the future, because it's not only nice to see things, it's an important source of knowledge, and you could even call it entertainment. People need nature even in urban places, so keeping this area and having these perspectives that as you so clearly envisioned is very good, and we would hope that more people would think that way, because then we will keep these things that we want the coming generations to see.
I have a question for you. Are people who are from Oslo, do they have a notion of the kind of historical development of this place? Is this like common knowledge? And I could ask people here that, you know, the history of this place, that it was kind of connected to a farmland, right? That it was actually not seen as a nature reserve, that there were like all these attempts at developing the place. Is this common knowledge for people who live in Oslo?
Probably not. Most people know that Oslo is a growing city and the population has increased enormously just the last few decades, and it's continuing to grow, and people are moving to Oslo from all kind of all areas in Norway, and of course also abroad. So most people don't think about it, I think. And they take it for granted that we have a thing like this, but it's not natural to have a thing like this in the middle of a capital. I had met with a delegation from the environmental department in China, a busload of bureaucrats, and they couldn't believe that we were able to have a place for this in a city like Oslo. And they asked me, why do you have it? You could use the land for buildings, whatever, why don't you fill it? It's doomed to have a nature reserve like this in a big city. But they said there must be some tremendous government that are able to keep it like this. And they were quite surprised when they realized that it was just a handful of citizens that took an initiative 40 years ago and started the process to keep this for the coming generations. So the answer is many people local and most elderly people of course know this. Everywhere there has been farmland before, and but as you see Østensjøvannet today, it was not like that in the old days. If you go 100-150 years back, this was farmland. There was almost no vegetation around the lake, so it was quite different. So it's like we see it now, it's a result of the last 50, 60, 70 years. And people don't remember that.
Yeah, it would be interesting to kind of make that knowledge visible in the landscape here. I don't know what that would look like, but it would need some design ideas.
I'm an immigrant too, and my first flat was right up there by chance. So I, of course, when I moved here, I didn't know anything about the water too. But since I'm very interested in nature, I got interested, and the information is very, very easy to find. So I read about the history, and also, for example, at the old farm up there, there is a plate with some information which I discovered when I just went walking. So the information is accessible, I guess, for the people who are interested in it.
Good afternoon. some time for one more question?
I think also about this question of development. I think it will depend very much about like how the values, the general accepted values, will develop. Because now we still live in we are very anthropocentric, our society. So we, and I'm, this is like the thing I hope most in my life, that there will be a paradigm change, that we actually give value to nature for its own sake and to every species. Because now, even in like in politics, when there is talk about preservation, it's always from the perspective what will reap profit from it. It will be better for us. And so, but even this, for example, wetlands we now know are very important also for climate change, right? Because it binds a lot of carbon. But even this doesn't prevent many politicians from still going for drying them out to have more land to build, to farm. So, I mean, this is very shocking, kind of, because even we know that it will also benefit us. But I think, like, the future will be very different if there is a paradigm change, and we, like for example, also for the preservation of species, I don't care if we can profit from an animal species or not. They have a right to exist, and they should be preserved anyway. Not one species should get extinct. So, and I think the future will be very different if kind of in our general values, this will change to a new view. If it will continue to be so anthropocentric, I'm not very optimistic for the future, kind of.
Yeah, more like multi-species justice perspective.
I thought it was interesting also that you were questioning who are the ones who can decide, who are decision makers for the future of these different places, and it's also a speculative question, but could you envision a way, for example, that non-humans can also be a part of the decision making?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult question because... yeah?
It is a question.
It is. I mean, they are a part of the decision making, because they are agents, that they are actors in like making this kind of ecosystem and bringing it to life. They're already making decisions to come here or not come here, like Mike and Felix. They can decide not to come here, you know, they can decide to come. So they're already making those decisions. I think, like, from our perspective, we will have to be like, how can we change our perspective to kind of be more open to the kind of agentiality of these non-human beings, and to see that they're already making decisions. Is the answer I can give right now, but something more specific and concrete, I can't think of it right now, really.
That's maybe a good end for the continue.
Yes.
And there will be many more questions coming.
Yes.
The
featured example is the Hedmark, where Fossekal, one half stands at Utbygging.
Yeah.